poet and poetry. A poet has three very special names: yesterday's delight seeker, today's delight seer, and tomorrow's delight harbinger. There are three types of poets: ordinary poets, great poets, and seer poets. Ordinary poets grow like mushrooms in infinite number. The great poets are few and far between and are also known as born poets. The seer poets are of the supreme heights. A seer is he who envisions the present, the past, and the future all at once. Poetry has three very special names: inspiration mind, aspiration heart, and beauty life. God wanted to have a very, very special garden of his own. He asked his poet son to be the gardener. He also asked the gardener to create a garden as beautiful as possible and at the same time as small as possible. The poet gardener devotedly asked God if there was any esoteric purpose for the garden to be smaller than the smallest and beautiful, more beautiful and most beautiful. God said to his newly appointed poet gardener, "What is poetry if not my real beauty? Do you not recall what my English poet son Keats' immortal utterance is? A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Beauty and infinity are inseparable. I want to reveal the infinity that I am to the finite that equally I am. Therefore, I am asking you to make me a garden of beauty unfathomable and beauty unsurpassable." God further said to his poet gardener, "My son, once you have accomplished your task to my satisfaction, I shall entrust you with another task. You will be the only flute player in my garden. Infinity's beauty lovers from the four corners of the globe shall visit and drink deep the beauty of our garden." The difference between a prose writer and a poet is this: a prose writer is a marcher. He marches and marches along eternity's road to arrive at infinity's goal. A poet is a singer. He sings and sings along eternity's road to arrive at infinity's goal. The prose writer has thunder legs. The poet has lightning feet. Arriving at the destination, the prose writer declares, "I have become." Arriving at the same destination, the poet whispers, "I eternally am." I have been writing prose and poetry for over half a century. I am very happily and proudly sailing in the boat of Coleridge. I wish our clever poets would remember prose words in their best order, poetry the best words in the best order. Again, it is illumining to read a comment by Rabindranath Tagore, the master poet of India, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913. He writes, quote, "I wonder the writing of pages of prose does not give anything like the joy of completing a single poem. One's emotions take such perfection of form in a poem, they can be taken up by the fingers, so to speak. While prose is like a sack full of loose material, incapable of being lifted as you please," unquote. Poetry I read to lighten my mind and enlighten my heart. Poetry I read to sweeten my bitter mind. Poetry I read to replace my heart's sorrows with my soul's ecstasy. Poetry I read to transform my human mind jungle into my divine heart garden. Poetry I read to fathom my own inner worlds and to scale my own higher worlds. Poetry I read to see and feel divinity's beauty inside the heart of humanity. Poetry I read to watch the hide and seek of my heart's tearing tears and my soul's blossoming smiles. Poetry teaches my heart infinitely more than it preaches to my mind. Ancient poetry pined for inner freedom. Modern poetry hungers for outer freedom. Since, according to many, I am a modern poet, I do not know how I can escape from Goethe's irrefutable observation of modern poets. Quote, "Modern poets mix too much water with their ink," unquote. Ancient poetry paid more attention to the unknowable than the knowable. Modern poetry maximizes the power of the knowable and allows the unknowable to remain a stranger, a perfect stranger. Ancient poetry boat was quite often overloaded with poetry passenger readers. Modern poetry boat is quite often empty of poetry passenger readers. Now, what about those who are not poetry lovers at all? No, not even poetry readers. They do not care in the least either for ancient poetry or for modern poetry. Dear audience, with your soul's permission, I am crying ditto to a statement made by Anthony Hope Hawkins. Quote, "I wish you'd read a little poetry sometime. Your ignorance cramps my conversation." Unquote. Ancient poetry loved to swim in the sea of tears. Modern poetry loves to surf in the ocean of laughter. Poetry tells the world, "Oh world, I am a flower. Appreciate my beauty if you want to. Enjoy my fragrance if you want to. But do not expect from me anything more than my beauty and my fragrance. If you expect anything more, you will be doomed to disappointment." Poetry tells the world, "Oh world, I can teach you how to smile even while you are crying." In my case also, I have my own ancient poetry and modern poetry. My ancient poetry embodied my inner cry. "A sea of peace and joy and light, beyond my reach I know. In me the storm-tossed weeping night finds room to rage and flow. My modern poetry reveals my inner smile. I'm flying and flying on immortality's wings in infinity sky. When I started my poetry journey, my inner experiences and realizations spontaneously expressed themselves through the power aspect. No mind, no form, I only exist. Now ceased all will and thought, the final end of nature's dance. I am it whom I have sought. My spirit aware of all the heights, I am mute in the core of the sun. I barter nothing with time and deeds, my cosmic play is done. As I continue my poetry journey, my inner experiences and realizations spontaneously express themselves through humility and devotion aspects. My Lord, your love has entrapped my eyes, my heart, my life, and my all. May I be allowed to entrap the hallowed dust of your feet. Throughout my poetry journey, my poetry tree has cherished various branches: philosophy, prayer, religion, spirituality, my love of nature's beauty, my love of word making, which the English language indulgently allows me to explore, and my abiding love, concern, and hope for this world of ours. When nationalism captures my mind, I soulfully sing, I dearly love my India and her age-old silence, peace. When internationalism embraces my heart, I offer my sleepless and breathless prayer song to God. My Lord, do give me the capacity to wipe every tear from every heart. Wherever I go, nature's beauty enters into me and feeds me with abundant inspiration. The sky calls me, the wind calls me, the moon and the stars call me, the green and the dense groves call me, the dance of the fountain calls me, smiles call me, tears call me, a faint melody calls me, the morn, noon, and eve call me. Everyone is searching for a playmate. Everyone is calling me. Come, come. One voice, one sound, all around. Alas, the boat of time sails on. It was Horace who offered us the following illumining definition of poets. Poets, the first instructors of mankind. May I add, poets, the first God beauty lovers of God nature creation. Poetry is not something to be understood. Poetry is not something even to be felt. Poetry is something to discover one's universal reality. Poetry is something to uncover one's transcendental divinity. I am deeply honored to be talking to you in this august hall dedicated to Theodore Rethke, the esteemed American poet who was a beloved professor and poet in residence at this university. According to my humble opinion, Fyodor Rifkin was truly a God beauty lover in God the creation. I would like to end my talk today by invoking the presence of his bright illumination soul. Quote, "The light comes brighter," unquote, which celebrates the simultaneous arrival of spring in nature and in the mind. Soon a branch, part of a hidden scene, the leafy mind that long was tightly furled, will turn its private substance into green, and young shoots spread upon our inner world. I'd like to give a short talk on philosophy, Indian philosophy, a glimpse. The philosophy of the mind says, God perhaps has. The philosophy of the heart says, God certainly is. The philosophy of life says, God is both the seeker and the sought. When I go beyond the mind philosophy, I declare, no mind, no form, I only exist. Now ceased all will and thought, the final end of nature's dance, I am it whom I have sought. My spirit aware of all the heights, I am mute in the core of the sun. I barter nothing with time and deeds. My cosmic play is done. When I go beyond the heart philosophy, I whisper, sweet is my Lord, Him I have realized as the eternal truth. Sweeter is my Lord, Him I have realized as the only doer. Sweetest is my Lord, Him I have realized as the enjoyer supreme. When I go beyond the life philosophy, I promise never to meet again my yesterday's face, my backward race, never to meet again. Never to meet again the clasp of death and Saturn's breath, never to meet again. Never to meet again Chinmoy the failure, ignorance sure, never to meet again. The cruel critics of philosophy say that philosophy is nowhere to nothingness and nothingness to nowhere. The same critics say that philosophy is absurdity's longevity. They also venture to say that in everything there is a winner, but when two philosophers fight, there is no winner, no loser. In this connection, I wish to cite the opposing views of two immortals in two different fields. Beethoven, who is vested with supreme authority in the musical world, says, "Music is a higher revelation than philosophy." Fortunately, Milton, the immortal epic poet, is there to gainsay this denigration of philosophy. Milton writes, "How charming is divine philosophy, not harsh and crabbed as dull fools suppose, but musical as is Apollo's lute." Beethoven, the two, I must needs cast my vote with Milton and place philosophy on the same level as music in its capacity to reveal and manifest the divine here on earth. To me, philosophy is the mind clearance, philosophy is the heart assurance, philosophy is the life transcendence. The philosophy of my mind says, I doubt. The philosophy of my heart says, I hope. The philosophy of my life says, I am lost. The philosophy of my soul says, I promise. The philosophy of my Lord says, it is all done. In May 1882, the great German scholar Max Müller delivered a series of lectures at Cambridge University. The first was entitled, "What Can India Teach Us?" Professor Müller expressed himself most powerfully and succinctly by saying, "If I were asked under what sky the human mind has most fully developed some of its choicest gifts, has most deeply pondered over the greatest problems of life, and has found solutions of some of them which well deserve the attention of even of those who have studied Plato and Kant, I should point to India. And if I were to ask myself from what literature we here in Europe, we who have been nurtured almost exclusively on the thoughts of Greeks and Romans, and of such Semitic race, the Jewish may draw the corrective which is most wanted in order to make our inner life more perfect, more comprehensive, more universal, in fact, more truly human, a life, not for this life only, but a transfigured and eternal life, again, I should point to India." When Max Müller ventured to study India's ancient scriptures, the Vedas, in their original Sanskrit, he truly discovered the wealth of meaning behind Hamlet's words, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy." With your kind permission, I used to take a leaf from Professor Müller's life book and ask, "What can Indian philosophy teach us?" Indian philosophy does not subscribe to the salvation from sin philosophy. Indian philosophy subscribes to the liberation from ignorance night philosophy. It offers to humanity an unparalleled prayer: "Lead me from the unreal to the real. Lead me from darkness to light. Lead me from death to immortality." This kind of philosophy is not God's speculation, but soulful God invocation based on an intuitive certainty of God's existence. Hence, we can never apply to it the criticism made by Keats that, quote, "philosophy will clip an angel's wings," unquote. Indeed, Indian philosophy is most closely connected with that of the ancient Greeks. It was Socrates who declared, "The unexamined life is not worth living," and Plato who ventured, "True philosophers are lovers of the vision of truth." In order to understand Indian philosophy, we must first realize that it is founded upon spirit and matter. Spirit plays the role of involution, matter plays the role of evolution. Spirit is inward dive, matter is upward flight. Now, God has a habit of repeating himself so that nobody remains with his philosophy unlearned. In India, this divine philosophy has been embodied and expressed in age after age by her spiritual masters and avatars, or direct descendants of God. India's first avatar, Sri Ramachandra's philosophy is obedience and sacrifice. Sri Krishna's philosophy is give up all religions, take shelter in me. You I shall liberate. Be thou only an instrument. You have the right to work, but not to the fruits thereof. Lord Buddha's philosophies, compassion and forgiveness. Sri Chaitanya's philosophies, love unconditionally. Everybody has the right to deserve love. India's philosopher, unparalleled, Sri Shankaracharya's philosophy is neti, neti, not this, not this. The world is an illusion. Sri Ramakrishna's philosophy is the synthesis of all religions. Be a childhood, God will immediately be all yours. Swami Vivekananda's philosophy is be brave, have adamantine willpower. The soul cannot be won by the weakling. Sri Aurobindo's philosophy is the acceptance of life, yoga integral. Fate can be changed by an unchanging will. We are sons of God and must be even as He. Ramana Maharshi's philosophy is, who am I? Who am I? Since I am a son of Mother India, I too have my own philosophy. My philosophy is love, devotion and surrender. Love the Supreme in humanity. Devote yourself to the Supreme in humanity. Surrender yourself to the Supreme in humanity. Each philosopher says of the highest order, realizes the truth in his own way. Each one creates a path which others may follow in order to arrive at the destination, the golden shore of the beyond. But the truth itself does not vary. That is why we say that the Indian philosophy, the Indian religion, and the Indian spirituality all have the self-same source. Satyameva Jayate, truth alone triumphs.
Thank you.
poetry, the winner. A poet sees what we cannot see, the highest beauty's golden crown, the deepest beauty's golden throne. A poet feels what you cannot feel, oneness with the sorrows of eternity, oneness with the joys of infinity. They say a poet is born and not made. Not true, not true, not true. I am an eyewitness. Many supreme poets at the dawn of their poetry adventure were nothing but pathetic. Again, there are many late bloomer poets who do not know how and when God's compassion eye descends on them. They say that poets are great but not paid. Not all is true, not all is true. Just become a Nobel Prize winner. Wealth, possession will be your new name. True, poetry and poverty are good friends, but poverty has its own joy. To feel that joy, we needs must have a different heart breath. That heart breath only a poet can claim. At times, the outer poverty can be an illumining expression of an inner purity. Poetry and invisibility are dear friends. Poetry and invisibility are great admirers. Poetry and invisibility are perfect oneness heart flyers, divers, and runners. When a poet sits in deep contemplation, who can say to which realm his thoughts are winging? Lord Byron jests, poetry should only occupy the idle. But the idle moments of his own life were not spent uselessly. Even in idleness, the inspiration promise of dynamism can burst forth. In Don Juan, for example, Byron writes, "The mountains look on Marathon, and Marathon looks on the sea. And musing there an hour alone, I dreamt that Greece might still be free." When the present mind enters into the bosom of the past, we tend to glorify the past. But when the present is with us, we treat the present either in a humorous vein or in a contemptuous vein. A poet in history is divine, but a poet in the next room is a joke, Max Eastman. Indeed, inside each human being, there is a poet. I fully concur with Huber. You will find poetry nowhere unless you bring some with you. We must have a subtle poetic touch of our own to appreciate and admire poetry. Poetry and truth are inextricably linked. The Sanskrit word for poet is kavi. Kavi means he who envisions. What does he envision? He envisions the truth in its seed form. Once more, I used to invoke Uwe. His sublime realization is, you arrive at the truth through poetry. I arrive at poetry through truth. I have been a poet all my life and have been a dreamer of truth as well. Inside my heart, I feel that these two players, the poet and the dreamer, are at once interchangeable and inseparable. That is why I wrote many years ago at the dawn of my poetry journey, "Arise, awake, O friend of my dream. Arise, awake, O breath of my life. Arise, awake, O light of my eyes, O seer poet in me, do manifest yourself in me and through me." And what is my poetry, and what do I actually expect from my poetry? O my poetry, you are the lotus of my heart, you bring into my heart nectar light from heaven. When my life flows with the river of sorrow, with its countless waves, may your magic touch hide me in the waters of liberation sea. At this point, I wish to cite the words of a certain poet. History has not preserved his name, but this veil of anonymity only serves to heighten the essential invisibility of a true poet. It is not we, but God who writes poetry in and through us. Quote, each time you pick a daffodil or gather violets on some hill or touch a leaf or see a tree, it is all God whispering, this is me, unquote. Something of tremendous importance in my life I wish to share with you. I cannot help reproducing a few momentous words from India's greatest poet Tagore from Fruit Gathering. Quote, to the birds you gave songs, the birds gave you songs in return. You gave me only voice, yet asked for more, and I sing. Unquote. Being both a prose mind writer and a poetry heart writer, I have made a supreme discovery in my own life. Every time there is a competitive race between my prose mind and my poetry heart, to arrive at God's golden palace, my poetry heart invariably wins. How and why? Because unlike my prose mind, my poetry heart sees invisibilities, reality, existence, life. Creativity, the amalgam of sorrows and joys. The mind is a creativity, so also is a thought. The mind says to the thought, I have you. The thought says to the mind, you I am. The heart is a creativity, so also is love. The heart says to love, I have you. Love says to the heart, you I am. The soul is a creativity, so also is life. The soul says to life, I have you. Life says to the soul, you I am. The learning of the mind is a creativity, expanding creativity. The feeling of the heart is a creativity, deepening creativity. The becoming of life is a creativity, manifesting creativity. Art is eternity's cry. Art is infinity's smile. Art is immortality's delight. Music is not the mind's creativity noise. Music is the heart's creativity voice. Poetry is not an earthly chimera's mist creativity. Poetry is heavenly beauty, dawn creativity. Art and God sleeplessly talk together. Music and God breathlessly feel each other. Poetry and God unceasingly look at each other. My life is God's creation. My blossoming smiles are my soul creations. My streaming tears are my heart creations. The inner creation is the source. The outer creation is the cause. The inner creation is indispensable. The outer creation is irresistible. My aspiration heart's inner creation is God exploration delight. My dedication life's outer creation is God manifestation light. Creativity is in learning. Creativity is in unlearning as well. Creativity is in action manifestation. Creativity is in inaction and rest as well. Only we have to know the proper order for the fulfillment of our life. My life cries ditto to the wise Chinese saying, be the first in the field, the last to the couch. My creativity boat plies between my desire earth tears and my aspiration heaven smiles. On a lighter note, only an English conductor perhaps can dare to declare, the English may not like music, but they absolutely love the noise it makes. Being an Indian, I feel I have the legitimate audacity to declare, the Indian music of yore touches, illumines, and fulfills my very earth existence. The modern, with an ultra-modern touch, Indian music chases me into the land of nowhere. Finally, from the spiritual point of view, creativity is the beauty of God revelation and the fragrance of God manifestation. Creativity is multiplicity's bloom and unity's blossoms. In the outer world, creativity is the light of individuality. In the inner world, creativity is the delight of universality. No matter how sublime the creativity is, the creator of it is not indispensable. If he comes to realize that, only then he will have peace of mind an abiding satisfaction. Finally, I wish to invoke the most celebrated of the ancient Greek mathematicians, Archimedes. Eureka, I found it, was his discovery cry. O aspiring world, him I found, my Lord Supreme, in the aspiration beauty and dedication fragrance of my art, music, and poetry.
Om Nishani
My peace education life. Peace I find when I'm lost inside God's compassion eye. Peace I become when I'm lost inside God's forgiveness feet. Mine is a mind jungle, totally empty of peace. Mine is a hurt garden, flooded with peace. The divine in us embraces peace. The human in us longs for peace. The animal in us destroys peace. As President Gorbachev, the peace dreamer, peace bringer, and peace server of this century has urged again and again, what we need is star peace and not star wars. I heave a sigh when my mind becomes a victim to searing conflicts. I become a singing bird when my life becomes the breath of peace. My heart's God, love, beauty has peace. My life's God, surrender, fragrance is peace. Devotedly I chant the name of my beloved Lord Supreme. Bountifully, my beloved Supreme enchants my life. My soul's peace smiles, and my heart's peace tears together cover endless miles unobstructed. Infinity is the source of my soul's peace smiles. Eternity is the source of my heart's peace tears. Peace is infinitely more than the birthless and deathless promises of my mind. Peace is in ever the blossoming hopes of my heart. I wish to cite the momentous utterance of U Thant, the third Secretary General of the United Nations, who was widely revered for his innate spirituality and deep wisdom. He said, "There is no peace in the world today because there is no peace in the minds of men. God comes to me compassionately, unconditionally, and gives me peace. Man comes to me immediately and ruthlessly and takes away all my peace. God comes and man comes. When God comes, I swim in the ocean of infinite delight. When man comes, my very earth existence is devoured by the unquenchable thirst and insatiable hunger of sorrows. But love mankind I must, for mankind is unmistakably an extension of my own reality existence. The lofty realization of Mother Teresa, the 20th century's unparalleled server of bleeding humanity, echoes and re-echoes in the inmost recesses of my heart. Works of love are works of peace. I ask God, my Lord, is there any way I can embody and treasure your peace forever and forever? God says, my child, there is a way. Just illumine your mind more, infinitely more. Feed your heart more, infinitely more. Energize your life more, infinitely more. Lo, in you, my infinity's peace has found its eternity's abode. Peace is today's soul seed world. Peace is tomorrow's life tree world. But the peace of tomorrow must be built upon the solid foundations of today. What are those foundations? President Woodrow Wilson, the champion of the League of Nations, has a most significant message for the world community in this connection. It must be a peace without victory. It must be a peace without victory. We can look to the soul-stirring words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to clarify our peace goal even further. This is the peace that we are seeking, not an old, negative, obnoxious peace, which is merely the absence of tension, but a positive, lasting peace, which is the presence of brotherhood and justice. This is the peace that we are seeking, not an old, negative, obnoxious peace, which is merely the absence of tension, but a positive, lasting peace, which is the presence of brotherhood and justice. O world, you will not be happy and satisfied if you come and visit God's omnipotent power head, but you will be completely happy and supremely satisfied if you come and visit God's omnipresent peace feet. Man thinks his mind's love for world power and his heart's love for world peace can live together. Indeed, this is the height of man's stupidity. Up until now, God has been pleading with the human mind to study the world peace course. But now God is forcing the human mind to study the peace course. The moment the division mind desires to live in the hearts of oneness peace world, God will immediately declare his supreme victory on earth. 1 minute of world peace is 10 hours with God. 1 minute of world peace is 10 hours with God.